DeCesare Group Podcast. I'm your host, Jim DeCesare, and I'm glad you're here. Every week, we bring you in-depth conversations with people in our community who are in the know about the latest economic development and business activities in South Central Kentucky. The DeCesare Group Podcast continues to grow because of you, so don't forget to tell your friends about us. And make sure you subscribe to the podcast on your preferred platform, leave us a review, and share your feedback with us. You can also follow the DeCesare Group across all of our social media platforms, Facebook, X, Instagram, and LinkedIn. And make sure you check out our website, thedecesaregroup.com, where you can subscribe to our newsletter, Soakie Economic Development and Business News. It comes out every Monday morning at 9 a.m. This week, I'm talking with someone who has had a huge impact on the beautification and the economic development of Bowling Green and Warren County for more than 30 years. I'm talking about former mayor and founder of Operation Pride, Johnny Webb. Mayor Webb also spearheaded Operation Pride's Beautify 65 project, which is responsible for the impressive gateway entrances you see throughout Bowling Green along I-65. Here's my conversation with Mayor Johnny Webb. Mayor Johnny Webb, thanks for being on the DeCesare Group Podcast. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks, Jim, for having me.
Hey, glad you're here. So let's start with some background. See, Southern School Supply, mayor, developer, et cetera. What all are you into these days?
Well, maybe we could start when I first came to Bowling Green.
Let's start there.
Okay.
Now, where are you from originally?
I'm from Lindseyville, Kentucky.
Okay.
Over in Edmonston County, about 25 miles northeast of Bowling Green.
That's where all the Webs are from, right?
Well, a lot of the Webs are from there. That's right. So I graduated from high school 16 years old, mm-hmm. and I finished high school in 3.5 years, and so I wanted to start Western that second semester.
Yeah.
So my dad gave me a check for $100. So I came to Bowling Green with a $100 check, and I registered for school at Western. And my tuition was $62.
Wow.
And I was able to buy my books and still had a little money left over out of that $100 check.
To go to the Starbucks, right?
yeah, Starbucks. So, but anyway, it was, I don't think there was a Starbucks there.
No, there wasn't.
It went somewhere. But anyway, things have changed a little bit as far as, you know, paying your way through college.
$62 will get you maybe a sweatshirt.
Maybe. And I worked all the way through school. I had a job working at the TikTok restaurant.
Okay.
Now, can you imagine that? I wish I'd have been smart enough to trademark that name, TikTok.
Right, yeah, no kidding.
Probably could have sold that for a lot of money. But I was slapping hamburgers and working a steam table at a TikTok restaurant down on Center Street.
Okay.
It's kind of across from where the Justice Center is located now.
Okay,
the
building, which is a parking lot.
It's a parking lot. And so I worked a double shift. I'd go down and work lunch, and that was when Bowling Green High was just up the street there on Center Street.
Mm-hmm.
And those kids would come down for lunch, and they would harass me as I was trying to, you know, fix their hamburger and french fries or whatever. So I've worked for about an hour and a half, hour and 45 minutes, and I would leave, walk back up to campus, take two or three more classes, and then walk back down there and do dinner. So we had this steam table, and it was a meet and three type deal.
Well, first rule of restaurant is you never, you know, harass the cook.
Well, that's true. I was, but I needed that job so badly, and I was being paid quite well. They paid me 60 cents an hour
nice.
To work there. Yes.
So do you want to tell us what year this was?
Yes. Yeah, that was in January, February of 1962.
Okay. Yep. So that predates me.
I know it does. Yeah, so. Predates a lot of people, Jim.
So when you're downtown Bowling Green, do you reflect on, you know, walking up that hill, you know, however many times you did going to and from campus to work?
Yes, I do. And, you know, it was in all kinds of weather. I mean, I remember the cold weather mm-hmm. more than I do the warm weather because, you know, I didn't go to summer school. And no, it was pretty miserable. And I was living in West Hall, and that was a pretty good walk from there to where the restaurant was. You know, from there to become mayor of Bowling Green, that was more than I was able to dream of. I mean, that would I probably at that point couldn't spell mayor, you know, let alone dreaming that at some day I would become mayor of Bowling Green.
And somewhere in between TikTok restaurant and becoming mayor of Bowling Green, you had Southern School Supply.
I did. Well, after college, I was following a educational curriculum, mm-hmm. and I was majoring in economic sociology, and so I had to do student teaching to complete my degree, and I had no designs on becoming a teacher, but I was sent down to Russellville, and I did my student teaching at the middle school in Russellville, and for 8 weeks, and I fell in love with it. I was paired up with this lady who had taught at that time for 41 years.
Wow.
Clara Louise Jones was her name, and she was such a sweet lady and really inspired me. Wow. So I thought, you know, being a school teacher wouldn't be all that bad, you know?
Right.
And so I did apply for a teaching position in the city and county schools, and there was no openings. And they said, well, we'll contact you if there's something comes available. And I had to find a job. I had to make some money. My wife had a teaching job up at Kyrock in Edmondson County.
Yeah.
And she was making $5,250 a year teaching school.
Big money.
Yes. And we had a little home out in Shawnee Estates, about a 1,200 square foot little brick rancher.
Right.
And $127 a month house payment. And
it barely fills a truck full of gas.
Well, I know, and the car payment I think was about 70 some dollars, and so that took about all of her money to pay the house payment after taxes and buy a few groceries. So I had to have a job, and when I didn't hear back from the boards of education, I went to the placement office at Western, and I said, you know, I've got to have a job. If people are coming through here looking for recent graduates, I would appreciate you giving them my phone number, because, mm-hmm. and they said, well, what kind of job are you looking for? And I said, I don't care. A job that pays some money. And they said, well, I mean, what do you think you could do? What would you be good at? And I said, well, my whole life I've been a salesman as a little kid.
Right.
My dad had a general store and at Lindsayville, and I would shine shoes in the store, you know, for whatever, 5 cents, 10 cents. And
yeah.
Then I would go out and sell greeting cards and clover ring salve. I don't know if anybody out there would know what clover ring salve is, but I would tell them, you know, if you had high blood, it would lower it. If you had low blood, it would raise it. So,
snake oil.
Snake oil, yeah. And I don't flower seed, and I sold grit newspapers. And
now, I do remember grit newspaper.
Okay. So I was kind of reflecting on that, and I said, you know, I think I'm a pretty good salesman.
They collected Coke bottles.
you didn't get paid for those anymore, I don't think. Yeah. Back then you didn't. But anyway, that afternoon after I left the placement office at Western, people from 3M came in, and they asked for names of some people that they might interview for a position. And so I got a call, and they said, would you come down to the Holiday Inn for an interview? And I said, absolutely, I will. So
yeah.
Early that evening, I went down and was interviewed, and so I had a subsequent interview and ultimately got hired. So I was given a territory. I was selling 3M visual products.
Okay.
Which, if you don't know what that is, overhead projectors and transparency makers and related materials.
Yeah. So. Did you do the old film projectors too? You know, the one every classroom had.
Well, no, we didn't have that.
Okay.
We didn't. No, it was the overhead projector, which you show a picture up on the wall. You have a piece of transparency film, and you write on that and project it on the wall
with the grease pencil.
Yes, yes. Yeah. And that was effective because the teacher could be facing the students.
Yeah.
Whereas before that, they turn around and write on the chalkboard, and then students would throw things at the teacher because she had her back to the classroom.
So when you did your interview, I have a follow-up here. The Holiday Inn, was it the one that was on the bypass
where the
department is now?
That's right. That's exactly where it was. Yes.
Wow.
And then it became the Holodome, if
okay.
you remember.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then it burned.
Yes, yes.
And so when you were doing your student teaching in Russellville, how'd you get over there?
I got over there. I bought a Volvo that was probably about 30 years old.
They're all 30 years old.
Well, this one, and it was like the ugliest one you've ever seen. It had that slope back to it, you mm-hmm. know, I mean, and the gear shift was in the floor, and a tiny little car. And I don't know, it seemed like I paid maybe $250 for it. And here's the funny thing. That's interesting you asked me that about my transportation to getting to Russellville. I would pull into the parking lot. And so the kids would be out there before school. And this car, when I would turn the ignition off, it would keep running.
Oh, yeah.
You know, just chug, 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 chug.
And it eventually turn off.
And so I had what I had to do, then I had to put it in gear and then let the clutch out. And a lot of people that's listening to this probably don't know about a clutch.
Yeah.
But anyway, and so then it would kind of choke it down, and those kids would gather around the car and laugh and make fun of me. So then I had to get out of the car and go into the classroom and face them.
Yeah.
And they thought I was a complete joke, I guess.
That's the guy with the Volvo.
Yeah.
Now, I do remember, so I do know what you're talking about, and the clutch, because my first car was a 5-speed. But also, a lot of times when those cars would keep running, you just hold your foot down on the gas until it petered out, you know, flooded.
Yeah.
So, anyhow. But then, you know, after Southern School Supply, you became the mayor of Bowling Green, and you had a good run there and did a lot of great things for the city. What's one of your most memorable achievements as Bowling Green mayor?
Well, if I can back up before I,
sure.
I will answer that question, but I left that sales job after 3.5 years, and mm-hmm. I started Southern School Supply.
Right.
And I built it into a pretty nice company. It was a regional company. I had about 28 salespeople traveling in about 6 states,
mm-hmm.
and had a small chain of retail stores. And in 1996, I sold that company to a large publicly traded company, traded on New York Stock Exchange.
Mm-hmm.
And they wanted me to work for them for 3 years, and I said, I don't know if I can do that or not. I made it for 18 months, and it was the most miserable 18 months of working in my life because they wanted to do things totally different than what I'd done.
Right.
And so I left that. Well, actually, prior to that, though, I still had Southern School Supply, so I got ahead of myself there a little bit. The city of Bowling Green was not doing great. We were in a recession and not doing great. And I had a number of people come to me and said, why don't you run for mayor? And I said, oh, no, gosh, no, I don't have any interest in that. And they said, well, you've been successful in business, and, you know, the financial situation for the city is not good, and we think that you can probably get us back on track. And I said, well, you know, I'm flattered that you would think that I could do that. And I said, no. And I had you know, 2 or 3 more people that I respected came to me. And finally, there was this one fella that came to me and said, I know you've been asked to do this, and you said no. And what I want to ask you is, you don't have to give me an answer right now, but will you think about it? And I said, well, sure, I'll think about it. And we were leaving. My wife, Glenn, and I, we would go to Vero Beach, Florida for the month of January. Mm-hmm. And we were leaving in a day or two prior to the gentleman telling me to think about it.
Right.
So we get down to Vero Beach, and I can't think about anything else. you know, and it's like, would I want to do this? Should I do this? And I asked Glenna, I said, honey, what do you think? And she says, well, this is your decision. I'm not going to tell you. I said, well, I appreciate your help, your advice, you know.
Yeah, so, I appreciate your no help.
Yeah. And it was like, I wasn't enjoying myself down there because I would wake up thinking about it. I'd go to bed thinking about it. And finally, this thought came to my head. Would I be proud of the fact that I had served as mayor of Bowling Green, Kentucky? And it was like a light bulb went off. And I said, yes, absolutely I would. And so the next morning, I called my friend David Wiseman, mm-hmm. and I said, go down to City Hall, reserve City Hall. We're calling a press conference. I'm flying back to Bowling Green, and I'm announcing that I'm becoming a candidate for mayor of Bowling Green.
How about that?
Yeah, so that's how it all got started.
You know, I've been in that similar position, and I asked myself a similar question. I asked myself, and I tell other people that are considering running for office, you know, they're like, I just can't make up my mind. And I'll say, well, ask yourself this question. In 10 years, are you going to regret not doing it? And usually that will tell you whether or not you should run or not.
That's interesting, Jim, you would say that, because that was exactly my thought process. Mm-hmm. When I've made big decisions in my life, I've tried to go far out into the future and think about, you know, was that the right thing to do? And looking back, would I be happy I did that? Would I be proud, or would I
or you'd be kicking yourself?
Sad, yeah. Yes. And so it was obvious to me that would be something that maybe I would be maybe more proud of that than anything that I'd ever accomplished in business.
Yeah. And so what year were you elected?
I was elected in November of 1991 and took office in January of 1992.
And you were my first mayor of Bowling Green.
Okay, when you came to town?
Yeah, we moved here in August of 92.
Okay. And I something that I did that some of my friends was disappointed in, that as a candidate, you know, you would have these forums. And so I announced at every forum, I'm not going to be a career politician. Mm-hmm. I'm going to do this for 4 years, and then I will move on. I will go back to doing business or whatever. And so some of my friends say, well, that was stupid. You know, that you're a lame duck before you ever take office, if you're lucky enough to get elected. And I said, well, it's okay. I just want to be honest, because I knew there were going to be a lot of difficult decisions that had to be made. We had city employees that hadn't had even a cost of living increase for 2 or 3 years.
Right.
And morale was low. And so I knew we were going to have to do some difficult things. And so I wasn't going to make decisions based on getting reelected. Mm-hmm. So, but fortunately, I got working with who was our head of economic development at that time, Dennis Griffin. Mm-hmm. And I asked him, I said, would you let me meet prospects when they come into Bowling Green that are potentially looking to relocate their business here? I said, you know, the only thing I've ever done successfully in my life is in sales. And I said, I can prove that I am pretty good at that. And he said, sure, I'd love that help. And I did. And so I would meet with every one of them. And we'd either have lunch or dinner with them. And I would, you know, try to smooth them and try to sell Bowling Green. And so we were maybe more lucky than just being good. We started attracting businesses to Bowling Green. And a lot of people are probably not aware of this, but somewhere around 2/3 or 70% of the budget for the city of Bowling Green is the occupational tax. Mm-hmm. And if you're losing jobs, and we were losing, there's a lot of companies had closed and moved away. And so the revenues had just dropped dramatically. So we were able to bring on more businesses. And so the occupational tax funds picked up. And so things started getting better. And then and we never raised taxes in the 4 years. Matter of fact, they were reduced. Mm-hmm.
That's always a good thing.
Yeah, it was a good run.
So anyway. Rarely do taxes get reduced.
That's true. Exactly.
Well, and so. Yeah, I know we're going to get into Operation Pride and Beautify I-65 here in just a moment, but I also want to talk real quick about the Bosnian community.
Yeah.
Because it was when you were mayor, a lot of us remember watching TV and people leaving Bosnia, and we ended up with a lot of refugees that relocated here to Bowling Green and Warren County in South Central Kentucky. I believe right now that population makes up about 7-8% of our population. You know, my neighbor, two of my neighbors are Bosnian, you know, mm-hmm. and they've been great entrepreneurs and productive individuals within our community. But I know from my Bosnian friends that, you know, there's a couple of, if they have pictures of politicians in their house, they have one of Bill Clinton. And they have one of Johnny Webb.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. You know, and I'm not saying that because whether you like Bill Clinton or not, but he was the president when all this happened, and he welcomed into our country, and you welcomed them into our community.
Yes, I did. And that has been a highlight of my career, I would say. A number of them are close friends right now that I met when they first came here. And Jake Simic. Yeah. He owns La Gala,
right?
An event center, and
I love Jake.
Yeah, he came to work at Southern School Supply, couldn't speak a word of English, and I the warehouse manager came to me and said, you need to come back here and meet this guy. Said, he speaks no English, but he works harder than anybody in the warehouse. And that warehouse was metal building. And in the summertime, that's when we...
It was out there on Lover's Lane, right?
That's right, Lover's Lane. And we'd bring in a lot of kids, a lot of them school kids, because that was our busy time getting ready for back to school. And he said, the warehouse manager said, he won't even take a break. You know, he works harder than anybody. When everybody else is taking a break, he still wants to work. And I said, well, yeah, I want to meet him. And so I took him to lunch, and we couldn't communicate except through hand signals. But anyway, I bought his lunch for him, and we've been friends ever since. And he's done extremely well. He owned the Brickyard Cafe and other places. And then another person I met, he is Taz.
Yeah.
So
he's been on the podcast.
Has he? Okay, wonderful. Taz, I admire him so much. He came here not being able to speak a word of English, and he had two small kids, and he had a job over in Scottsville working in a factory, and he told me that he wasn't making enough money to buy diapers for his kids, and he knew he had to do something to make some more money, and he found out about a truck driving school down in Jacksonville, Florida. And he borrowed enough money to go to Jacksonville. And the reason he went there, they had an interpreter there. So he was down there for about 3 weeks and got his CDL. And he came back and he got a job working for a trucking company in Nashville. And he said the first week he made about three times more than he did the working in the factory. And then he started saving his money as if he was making the same money working in the factory. He tried not to, you know, spend that money.
Right.
And within 6 months, he saved up enough money to buy a tractor. All right. And then within about another 6 months, he bought a second one. Then he bought a third one. Today, I think he has about 150 tractors and over 250 trailers.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got a huge business. I just admire that so much.
And one of the things you worked with Taz on was to get that nice Bowling Green sticker on the back of all those trailers.
Taz loves Bowling Green, and he gives Bowling Green credit for his success, but he needs to take credit for it himself. But yes, I asked him one time, I said, you got all these trailers out on the road. Would you care if we put some kind of a sign on the back of these trailers promoting Bowling Green? He said, oh, absolutely. So Bowling Green was selected by Time Magazine as being one of the best places to live. And so we did a logo, and we've got 825 of those on trailers traveling in all 48 continental states.
That's awesome.
And so what great publicity and promotion is that for our community?
I remember vividly, I was up near Columbus, Ohio a couple of years ago, and I passed one of those trucks, and I saw that sticker, and I took a picture and sent it to Taz.
Yes.
And you mentioned Jake and Taz, and they're two great examples of the Bosnian community that's come over here and had a lot of success. Both of their daughters are friends with my daughter.
Oh, really?
And, you know, and Justin, my son, and Brooke went to school with Arden and Arnella. And
yes.
So
that's wonderful.
Yeah, just great people. All right. So we've covered a lot of territory already here, and really I wanted to talk to you about when you were mayor, you began a program called Operation Pride.
Yes.
And tell us a little bit about that.
Okay. Well, one of the reasons that I thought that we weren't progressing as well as we should when I became mayor was because Bowling Green basically had fallen in disrepair, and when prospects were coming to our town to look at it, they wouldn't be impressed. And I said, we've got to do something about this.
Mm-hmm.
We got to clean up Bowling Green.
Yeah.
So I brought together three other people to have lunch with me. And one was Denny Griffin, who was doing the economic development stuff for our city. The other was David Garvin. And the other was Mike Buchanan, who went on a couple of years later to become our county judge executive.
Right.
So I told him what I wanted to do, and I just had a vision. I didn't know how to do it, but I knew we needed to clean up Bowling Green, and they all agreed. And I said, okay, the first thing we need to do is to find somebody to head this thing up. I said, I'll be involved, but I'm busy. I'm still running a company, and I'm mayor of Bowling Green. And somebody mentioned the name Dan Cherry, General Dan Cherry.
Yeah.
Said he would be great. And but then somebody said, well, he can't do it. He's taking a job working at Commonwealth Health, and he won't be able to do it. Then we talked about a few other people. And then finally I said, well, okay, now wait a minute. Let's back up. If Dan Cherry is the best person, let's just don't assume that he can't do it.
Yeah.
So I went. I had met him. I just had met him fairly recently prior to that, and so he was working up on what I call Hospital Hill, the mm-hmm. old where the old hospital is, and I went up and met with him, and I think David Garvin went with me, and I told him what my idea was and described it in some detail, and I said, Dan, do you think you could do that? And he said, yes, I could. He said, matter of fact, I've done something like that. I was the base commander of a Air Force base in Japan. And he said, I did something pretty much like what you're talking about. And I said, well, would you be willing to come to work? He said, well, I can't leave this job. He said, I just got here and they're paying me pretty well. And he said, I just can't. And I said, okay. Well, John Demaray was the CEO of Commonwealth Health. And I said, would you mind if I go talk to John? I knew John. And he said, well, no, that'd be fine. So I go into John's office, and I tell him about my vision for this. We didn't have a name. We just need to clean up Bowling Green, make Bowling Green look better, you know. And he said, yeah, I agree. It does need some help. And I said, the guy that we really need for this is Dan Cherry. And I know you hired him recently. And I said, would you be willing to put him on loan to us for a year to get this thing off the ground? And he said, I don't know. Let me think about that. And because I could tell he really liked the idea. And I said, but there's one other thing, John. I said, I will need you to continue paying his salary. And he said, oh, my goodness. He said, now, I've really got to think about that.
Yeah.
And he said, I'll give some thought to it, and I'll call you. And it wasn't maybe 2 or 3 days later, he called me up and he said, I like that idea so much. Yes, we're going to loan General Dan Cherry to you for a year, and I will pay a salary. And so actually it ended up being a year and a half or 2 years, I think.
Yeah.
And and Dan was the one, you know, I kind of had I had the skeleton, but Dan put the meat on the bones.
Right.
And he came up with the name Operation Pride. Mm-hmm. And Pride is an acronym that stands for paint, repair, improve, develop, and enjoy. And so that a lot of people don't know that.
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah, and you know, this may be a little off the record here, but you know, that name has kind of been hijacked from us.
Yeah,
Pride, and some people said you ought to change it. You know, people don't really understand what you're doing, and we've thought about it, and I thought, well, we've been doing this for 31 years.
Right.
And I think I'm just going to hang with that, you know? Yeah. So we have.
And, you know, putting that operation in front of it, sort of the military way of doing things.
Yes.
Whenever they have a project that, or a mission,
it's
Operation whatever.
And right. Yeah.
That's fantastic. I did not know that that's what Pride stood for. Mm-hmm. And if I remember, I think out on 185 is where you had I think David had a building there where Operation Pride sort of worked out of, and had people that would go out and do the things.
Actually, the first office we had, Mike Buchanan donated an office to Operation Pride. It was on Fairview.
Okay.
But since you mentioned 185, I'll tell you what our first sign, the Welcome to Bowling Green.
Mm-hmm.
Dan, one of the first things Dan said, you know, we got to do something about this signage coming into Warren County and into the city of Bowling Green. You know, it's just a rectangular sign that if you're coming into the county,
the
it just
state
says,
green sign that says City of Bowling Green?
Well, or coming into the county, it says Warren.
Yeah.
Okay, first of all, come Warren. And quite often, it could be at a creek or a river or something. And Dan said, people coming into our county for the first time, they think you're telling them this is Warren Creek or Warren River. They don't know it's Warren County. It doesn't say county.
Right.
It just says Warren. you know, if you're from Kentucky, you know what that means. But if you're from out of state, you don't know. He says, we can do better than that. So we got a designer to come up with some real clever design of what the signage would be coming into the county and into the city.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So we got the design and we loved it, and we're still using that today.
Right.
And I'm going to tell you something that probably shouldn't tell, but
all right. Well, we're recording. Go ahead.
Okay. after we decided on the signs, and then so that was like the middle of the week, and on Saturday morning I get a call from David Garvin, and he said, "Okay, I'm out here at Wacky Signs," and said, "We're building the first sign." I said, "What? Really? I mean, we hadn't talked about started making them yet. I mean, we hadn't even figured out how we're going to get the money for them." And he said, "That's okay. I'll pay for the first one. And I'm going to put it up out here, you know, Richardsville."
Yeah.
So I said, "Well, okay." And he said, "Now, what I need to know is, what's the population of Bowling Green?" And I said, "Well, the last census said that Bowling Green was a little less than 42,000, 41,000 and something."
That'd have been the 1990 census.
1990 census, yeah. That's right. And he said, "Oh, it's bigger than that now, isn't it?" You know, that was in 1993.
Yeah.
And I said, "Oh, well, yeah, it would be. We've grown some." He says, "What do you think?" And I said, "Well, we're probably, we could be maybe 45,000. He said, "Oh, no, it's bigger than that." And I said, "Well, I don't know, maybe." And I don't know what I said. I said, "Well, maybe we could go 47 or 48. Well, he said, "Let's get it over 50. And I said, "Well, okay, but we got to come up with some odd number. We can't just say 50,000. And I forgot what we settled on. I believe it was 51,000 and some odd number.
51,289
yeah,
or something like
whatever.
That.
Whatever. Yeah. And so we put that on the signs, that was the population of Bowling Green. And nobody questioned it. And but what they did question was, a number of people would come up to me and they would say, "You know, I just noticed, you know, Bowling Green's really growing." And I said, "Yeah, it is." And they said, "You know, I didn't realize, you know, we're over 50,000 now." I said, yeah, we're doing good. So, you know, it's just.
You had to have a number.
Yeah.
So, and so when Amy and I moved here in 92, I think we, you know, I knew it was 50-ish.
Yeah.
And you look and reflect over 30-something years now, you know, look where we are today. I mean, yeah, we've had the third largest city in the state, one
yes.
of the fastest growing.
And we were fifth at that time.
Yeah. So
yeah.
We've moved up.
Yes.
So
yeah. We passed Covington and Owensboro.
Yeah. And still growing.
Still growing.
And still growing, which is, you know, everything started somewhere. And I've talked to, you know, we've had Mike Buchanan on here. We've had Jody Richards on here. We've had Gary Ransdell. You're talking about community first.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, you're part of that, of where we are today. It started in the early 90s and making that change. In fact, Lost River Cave, if you remember, in the early 90s was a dump.
Yes.
For lack of a better term.
It was.
And, you know, that was part of that, you know, revitalization that happened during that time. So Operation Pride comes along, you got that going on, and then you sell your book company, you're no longer mayor, you've done some development, I know that part of it, mm-hmm. and you spend time in Florida, but you're still actively involved in the community. Then the next thing we know, we're seeing things happening along I-65, beautify I-65.
Right.
And so it seems like you get either you get an idea or someone tells you an idea and you just like, all right, I've got it and I'm going to run with it. So let's talk about beautify I-65, because I can tell you, and I travel, you know, all over the country at times, and people say, when I come, I was coming through Bowling Green the other day and noticed a big, beautiful sign when I came into town, and I was like, oh yeah, Johnny Webb's all over that and the horse fencing and, you know, so let's tell us how okay. all this came about.
Okay. All righty. I was traveling down I-65. I was in Alabama. I was going down to, I believe it's Tuscaloosa, to look at some apartments. I've been investing in multifamily housing for the last several years. And so I passed through, I didn't pass through the town, but it was a interchange that led into Hartsel, Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden I noticed in the median that they're mowing out there, doing finish mowing, and then on the right of way, and then they'd done some landscaping. And prior to that, you know, the weeds were like knee high or higher.
Right.
And they had two interchanges. And so I said, wow, this looks great. And I got to thinking, well, you know, how do they do this? Why do they do it? What's the benefits of it? And I pulled off the side. I made some pictures of it. And I get back to Bowling Green. So I called the mayor of Hartselle, Alabama. And I introduced myself. I'm Johnny Webb, former mayor of Bowling Green. And I was so impressed when I drove by the two exits going into your city, what you've done. And I said, would you allow me to come down there and talk to you about that? And he said, sure. And he was so proud of it, you know.
Yeah.
So I went down there and he gathered all of his department heads in and they told me all about it. And so I'm driving back to Bowling Green with our executive director of Operation Pride. And I said, okay, we're going to do this in Bowling Green, Kentucky. But we're going to do it on steroids. I said, you know, if you think this looks good, you wait till we get this done. And I didn't know how I was going to do it. I didn't know what it was going to cost, but I knew I was going to do it. And at that time, we had four interchanges,
right?
20, 22, 26, and 28. Mm-hmm. We had not built
30
at that point. So and I didn't know what I was getting into. Or I probably wouldn't have done this because that was 6 years ago.
Yeah.
So I...
you created the monster, so...
Well, yeah, I got, you know, tiger by the tail and couldn't turn it loose. So anyway, I found out, you know, you can't go out there on the interstate and you can't stick a shovel in the ground without getting permission from the Kentucky Department of Transportation and the Federal Highway Commission. Mm-hmm. So I talked to them and they said, well, you're going to have to... I told them what my vision was. Well, you're going to have a plan. So anyway, we hired a company, two companies teamed up to develop this plan. And I think we spent somewhere around $150,000 or $160,000 to develop this detailed plan before they would let us go out there and do anything.
Right.
So once they saw that, they said, okay, now who's going to manage this? Now, first of all, I was told by these people that it would take $2.5 million to do this. And I would have to raise $2.5 million. And I was determined to do that, raising it from the private sector, mm-hmm. from individuals and small businesses. I was not going to go to city, county, state, federal government, ask for a penny. So anyway, I set out trying to raise money for that. And then they said, but who's going to manage this? You know, if you're lucky enough, I don't think they thought that I could actually do it, raise that much money and do that. But if you're lucky enough to raise the money and you can implement that, who's going to take care of it? And I said, well, Operation Pride will take care of it. And they said, no, we need somebody. I said, they may not be around. And I said, well, they'll be around as long as I'm around. And they said, well, how long are you going to be around?
Yeah, how old are you?
Yeah, and I said, well, that's
went to college in 1962.
Yeah, I said, that's a very good question. I said, well, maybe the city of Bowling Green. And they said, well, actually, do you think you could get the county to be responsible? Because the county is a subdivision of the state of Kentucky.
Right.
And cities can take bankruptcy. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't see it very often. I mean, it does happen occasionally. But
mainly in California.
Yeah, California. That's right. That's right. Now I don't know that we've ever seen it here in Kentucky, but you can. A county cannot take bankruptcy.
That's right.
And that's what the state of Kentucky wanted. So I talked to my good friend Mike Buchanan. Yeah,
we've already heard that name once.
We have, yeah. Yeah. And I said, will y'all sign an agreement with the Kentucky Department of Transportation that you will make sure that this is maintained? And he said, yes. So... anyway, I start my fundraising and...
real quick question. Yes. So the county's involved, and I believe you got Parks and Rec that kind of...
For the maintenance, they gave that to the Warren County Parks and Recreation Department. Mm-hmm. And for the first year, they maintained it. And then we decided that we might be able to save some money if we bid it out and let someone from the private sector do it. And that's what we're doing now.
Yeah, I got you.
So, but the county is still responsible for it. Mm-hmm. And on the fundraising, I'm now up to probably over $5.5 million that I've raised.
Wow.
For this. And I'm still raising. I still need a little more money. And but I need to tell you that we had to have the city, the county, and the Convention and Visitors Bureau to step in and say that they would help support this in terms of the ongoing maintenance.
Right.
And they do. So.
Yeah, and you know this as well as I do. It's in government or anything that's quasi-government or whatever. you know, building something is the easy part.
That's right.
It's the operation and maintenance that yes. costs the money.
Yes.
And it sounds like, you know, you got three great entities that are involved with this. And you know, I noticed that, you know, coming from south to north and north to south, you have the two, and then you have the one, the medical center.
26.
At 26. But the latest touch is the horses.
Yes.
they're a game changer yes. for me.
Yeah. Well, again, Mike Buchanan. See, that was his idea. Mm-hmm. He said, we need some horses on these, you know, and I said, well, okay, let's look into it. And so how many do you think we need? And he came back and he said, I think we need 9 horses. So I don't know. I think we put 6 up at 30 because there's 9 acres up there that yeah. the state of Kentucky deeded over to Warren County Fiscal Court.
Oh, okay.
So Warren County government owns that 9 acres now. It used to be a rest area.
Yeah.
And when they knocked that down, and then it wasn't being used for anything. So, and then the Southern Gateway, it's smaller. We've got about 2 acres there that Brad Kelly was willing to give us an easement where we built that. And I think we've got maybe 3 of the horses down there.
Yeah. And I was counting the other day. I was driving somewhere, but I was coming from Franklin, and I think I was going up towards Smith's Grove or somewhere up near the Trans Park. And you've got the big American flags mm-hmm. at all 3 of the entrances or mm-hmm. the areas. And then Camping World has a big American flag.
Right.
I think Fruit just put one out.
Well, we put that one up.
Okay.
Yeah. And so, also put one up there in front of the Corvette plant.
Yes.
We put one up there at Motorsports Park. Mm-hmm. That's the, you know, the yeah. track that the museum built over there. Let's see.
So that's 7.
I think we've got 7 now, there's going to be another one up at 30. That's a 50-foot pole there, and there will be a 130-foot pole up there.
Wow!
And we're hoping to get one over at Cumberland Trace Elementary School. That sets on a very high point.
Yep.
And we're hoping that they will put one up there beside the school.
So I cannot think of any other place that I've traveled on a major interstate where you go from the first exit to the last exit of a town, and they have that many huge American flags yes. along the interstate.
Yes. They're 30 by 50 feet, those flags Ooh. Are. And it takes about 5 or 6 people to put them up. You can't allow the flag to touch the ground.
Right.
And if the wind's blowing, it'll pick you up off the ground if you're not careful. You can get injured putting a flag up or taking it down. If I may, I want to tell yeah. you a little bit about how this 10 and a half miles stretch that we've what we call Beautify 65
yeah
how it stands out from the rest. You know, I-65 is 1100 miles long.
Mm-hmm.
It goes basically from the Great Lakes to the Gulf of Mexico,
right?
And there's nothing, and this is about the middle of that 1100 miles, there's nothing like this in that 1100 miles like what we're doing out here. So we are like an oasis, if
right.
you will. So people traveling going from the Chicago area south to Florida or from Florida back north, where are they going to stop? Are they going to stop at a place where the weeds are waist high to go to a bathroom or to go to have lunch or to spend the night? Or will they stop at a place that has these beautiful American flags and it's mowed and got the black horse fence? And we have 18 wildflower beds out there, by the way,
yeah.
in the 5 interchanges. They're going to want to pull off here. And they're going to spend money here.
Yeah.
So.
And so that leads to the question, you know, when you have this kind of welcoming environment, I mean, it really has a huge impact when we have site selectors come to the area looking to put their new industry here, or people are looking to move here, you know, are they going to move here? Are they going to move down the road? Look at Bowling Green. They got it going on there, you know? So just, it's fantastic. And then the horse fencing, I mean, how many miles, you've got 10, what did you say? 11 and a half miles?
No, 18 and a half.
18 and a half miles.
Uh-huh.
So how many miles of fencing do you have?
No, 18 and a half miles of fencing.
Oh, okay.
About 10 and a half miles of mowing.
Yeah.
Yeah. But 18 and a half miles of what we call black 4-plank horse fence.
Yeah. And that's on both sides of the interstate.
Yes.
From, you know,
south of 20 to up 30.
Yeah. Unbelievable. And is that project, I've noticed that not too long ago, they were still putting fence up. Have they finished that yet?
They're finishing it either today or tomorrow.
Really?
Yes, yeah. Uh-huh. And it hasn't been painted, but it will be. We've had difficulty getting paint. that's been, for some reason, one of those products that's been difficult to get. We have a person who specializes in painting that type of a fence.
Right.
And that, well, they move. One guy's on one side, another guy's on the other side, and they paint the fence, and they end up painting each other, too, I think.
And I'm assuming you had to work a lot of property owners along the way as well.
We had to get easements from them because we have to be on their property to put it up. The fence is actually on the state right of way.
Yeah.
But to paint it, you've got to, you know, walk along the private property side. And so we get them to sign off in case there was somebody had an accident or whatever. They won't be held liable.
So when you envision the Beautify 65 program, has it met your expectations?
It has. It has. It's actually grown, you know. Of course, I didn't envision the wildflowers. I didn't envision the horses. I didn't envision 130-foot flagpoles.
Yeah.
We have the branches of all the military out there, and we get so many compliments on that. You know, Bowling Green has a lot of veterans in it,
and you have prisoner of war flag too.
Yeah, we do have prisoner of war flag. We have the Space Force flag.
Yeah.
Because
it's got a connection to Bowling Green.
The young man who heads up the Space Force went to Bowling Green High School, and his parents still live here. And so we had to put that up. And so we're hoping to get him down here, maybe have a flag raising on that, and maybe get some national publicity out of it, you know.
And then get something out at the Aviation Heritage Park, too.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
But just great work, Johnny. I know you young fellas get a lot of things done because you have all this energy. But what's the future for Beautify 65? Anything new in the pipeline? I know the legislature. I know you didn't go out and ask for any money, but I think the legislature put a little money in to help out.
They did. Yes, and I want to give kudos to first of all, Richie Sanders helped us with that. Senator Mike Wilson, you know, he's in leadership, and he helped us with that. And Senator Max Wise and Senator David Givens, they all sponsored that. So they were able to get us $300,000 a year for the next 2 years. So a total of $600,000, and that will go toward the ongoing maintenance.
Awesome.
So this kind of takes the pressure off of the city, the county, and the Convention and Visitors Bureau from worrying about having to pony up more money, you know, anytime
in the next two years.
Beyond.
So any other projects in the works that you can tell us about?
Actually there is one, and I'm glad you asked. We're going to take on 165, which is the former Natcher Parkway. Yeah. And I don't know about any fencing, but from the Glen Lily Road Bridge to 231 or Scottsville Road, that's roughly about 10 miles.
Yeah.
We're going to pick up the trash there, and we're going to mow it. And on the three interchanges, which is Nashville Road, Russellville Road, and Morgantown Road, we're going to do grooming mowing with zero-turn mowers there.
Okay.
And the people that live in that part of town that would travel on 165 and they want to go south on toward Nashville Road or Russell Road or Morgantown, they're going to see a huge improvement. So that'll happen this year. I don't know exactly when, but we're working on it right now. And the reason we're able to do that is because we've been able to raise these additional funds.
Awesome. And we got that new elementary school going right there near Morgantown Road, which will just help, you know, make everything look a lot more snappier out there.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Johnny, this has been a lot of fun. Did I not ask anything?
No, I think we covered most everything. It's been a labor of love. I've enjoyed doing it. You couldn't have paid me to do this, but I didn't do it for money.
Yeah, and you didn't get paid either, did you?
I did not get paid. I haven't made a penny out of this. I've spent quite a bit of money out of my own pocket, which I'm happy to do. And my wife thinks I'm crazy for doing this because I get home at night and she says, "What have you done today?" And I start telling her about what I've done out on 65. And she'll say, "Well, can we talk about something else? That's all you ever talk about." And I say, "Well, I don't really know anything else. This is all
it's all you're doing.
That's all right? I do." Yeah. So anyway, but it's, no, she likes it, but she'd probably rather me come home and talk about, let's go work in the garden or something.
Yeah, you mow your own yard.
Yeah.
Hey, Johnny, thank you. And I just want to say, and I think I say this for a lot of people, we appreciate all you've done for Bowling Green. And I know you don't go out there and beat your chest and ask for anybody to acknowledge you for that. You work under the radar, and I appreciate that. But I'm going to acknowledge you right now, and I'm going to thank you not only for all you're doing to make our community just a better place, but for your willingness to step up and do that work as well.
Thank you, Jim. I appreciate that so much.
Hey, thanks for being on the DeCesare Group podcast.
My pleasure.
Thanks so much to former Bowling Green Mayor and Operation Pride founder Johnny Webb for joining us on the DeCesare Group podcast. His leadership and vision will certainly have a lasting impact on our community. And thank you so much for listening to the DeCesare Group podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast on your preferred platform. Leave us a review and share your feedback with us. The DeCesare Group podcast is produced by the DeCesare Group, a full-service public relations and consulting company in South Central Kentucky. Our engineer is the beautiful Justin DeCesare, with content contributions from Brooke Mattingly and Amy DeCesare. I'm Jim DeCesare, and join us again next time for the DeCesare Group podcast.